Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Catch Up with Louise McSharry. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am so happy wherever you are, wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening. I'm so happy that you've chosen to and so grateful. And gratitude is actually exactly where I need to start this week because I was completely blown away by the response to episode one. It was just so warmly received, and I cannot thank you all so much. So many people took the time to message me, to post on social media, to review it, to, you know, just interact with the podcast, which is all I ever wanted. And it has made me feel very excited, but also a little bit scared that I'm not going to be able to kind of keep it up. But I'm going to do my best. And I just wanted to say really thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting me in such a big way. It's much appreciated. So hopefully, as I said, I can keep up the standard. And I think you're going to enjoy today. So later on in the pod, you will hear me having a chat with Andrew Fitzsimons, who, if you're a fan of the Kardashians, you know who Andrew is. He's the Irish hairdresser who has been in the background of many a scene. He is on call for them most of his current life, and he helps to make their hair look absolutely beautiful. And the reason that I wanted to talk to him today for the podcast is he has launched his own hair care brand, and I was really moved, I think is the word, by the inclusivity in that campaign and the diversity of the women, mostly women, and the people he used in the campaign. For me, you know, as a fat woman, we don't often see ourselves. Sometimes you might see someone who's like, you know, a plus size model in fashion terms, which usually doesn't mean, you know, it usually means a relatively thin woman. And she's probably tucked away behind another crowd of models. But this campaign features a proper plus size woman, you know, in her own image, in all of her fierceness and power. And I wanted to ask him about that and why he decided to do that. So we'll be doing that later on. And also, it's, you know, I love to talk to celebs. And this week was a big week when it comes to celeb news. So I'll be chatting through all of the week's stories with Cassie Delaney. But first, it is time to chat through the week's news. I'm absolutely delighted to be back with Aoife Moore of the Irish Examiner, who is going to take us through the week's news stories. And we're going to start in Ukraine. And I was thinking about the fact that, you know, a few weeks ago, it was kind of an all-consuming thing that was happening. It was all anyone was thinking about. We were all talking about it. But it's kind of faded a little bit in terms of people's consciousness now. And that's kind of just what happens, isn't it, with big news stories?
Yeah, I think it's like a coping mechanism for human behavior as well. You know, before Ukraine, we were all like really concerned about Afghanistan, and before Afghanistan, we were really concerned about, you know, COVID-19. I think I read somewhere that like society in general can only really hold, you know, one thing to be panicked about at a time. And I think, yeah, it's a coping thing that you get used to seeing, or we're so used to seeing like these really horrific images of like shelling and bombing and like Western European cities in Ukraine. And then we're even now used to seeing, you know, images of, you know, refugees coming through Dublin airport or in camps in Poland and stuff like that. But I don't think people should feel guilty either. I do think it is a coping mechanism. Like, you can't walk around with this big cloud hanging over your head all the time. Like, you can be concerned about it, but it doesn't have to be all consuming.
Yeah.
And like, I would, like, I was just looking in the news today, and there are peace talks, but it is, I've actually noticed this, that, you know, the news and the lines that are coming out of the peace talks are being held in Turkey, and it's Russian and Ukrainian negotiators, and the Turkish lines that are coming out of it, it's like, yeah, you know, really optimistic, you know, things are happening. And the Ukrainians are like, no, like, they don't trust the Russians whatsoever. You know, the Russians said that they would kind of reduce the amount of shelling and bombing in certain cities. That really hasn't happened. You know, there's new series of missile strikes on different cities, things like this. So it's one of those things. I get up, it's that, you know, the viral tweet of like, I get up every day, have a coffee and check on Zelensky.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way I feel at the minute, is that, isn't it strange how like everyone has taken to Zelensky? He nearly has this like superhero type quality. But basically, he said that, you know, Ukrainian people are skeptical, especially of Russia. Russia is saying one thing in negotiations and doing another on the ground. There was some chat during the week that if, you know, Ukraine decided not to join NATO, not to build up their military, you know, there could be some kind of settlement. That hasn't come to anything. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing now like different cities are being attacked. Four or five cities have been attacked in the last couple of days. Putin's not letting up. The lines that are coming out of the security services are saying that, you know, his military, you know, he has a lot of military might, but the morale within the troops is not there. Like, even you see the images of the Russian soldiers, they're like 19.
I know. You know,
they're so young.
It's horrible. And then obviously all the oligarchs are being punished as well, which I'm sure is having an impact.
Yeah, because this isn't a popular invasion, really. Yeah. I know obviously there's a lot of state propaganda in Russia, so it's hard to get a read on what the actual feeling is. But when you start hitting people in their pocket, you know, we're seeing these sanctions, the toughest sanctions that have ever been put on Russia and Russian oligarchs. And we saw during the week that Roman Abramovich, the former owner of Chelsea, was poisoned. Things are getting it feels like a film sometimes.
Yeah.
But Ireland, for instance, we expelled four Russian diplomats this week, Simon Coveney. And the Department of Foreign Affairs wrote to the embassy and said that they had been expelled. They said that their behaviour was not acceptable. And, you know, there's Article 9 of this convention. You can expel people. The government are at pains to stress that they're keeping diplomatic channels open with Russia. They have not expelled the ambassador. Now, every single opposition party has called for them to expel the ambassador. However, the government says that's not how diplomacy works. We need to keep the ambassador there. We need to keep the channels open. And also, there are a lot of Irish people in Russia. When they expelled the Russian diplomats this week, the Russian embassy put out a statement and said the move will not go unanswered.
Ah.
Which I find very ominous.
Yeah, I read that and was like, I don't like that.
No. What we might see is that they might expel some of the Irish diplomats in Moscow.
Right.
Kind of a tit for tat thing. We'll have to wait and see. But I find that very, very ominous at the time.
Don't really like that language.
No. But yeah, so things, the thing is, I don't know how long this can go on for, because, you know, we know that NATO aren't going to send troops and they said that they won't. I think it's going to, like, Ukraine is going to lose something, I think, in this, and Putin will be emboldened by that.
Right. So. From one positive news story to another, I'm loath to talk about COVID again. I kind of hoped that wouldn't be something that we would have to do, but I kind of feel like we have to acknowledge the rise in numbers.
Yeah, it's rising exponentially. I mean, even anecdotally, I'm sure everyone listening to this at this stage knows someone who has had or does have COVID. I've had COVID, you've had COVID.
I've had COVID in the last few weeks, yeah.
So we know the cases have exploded. We're at thousands and thousands of cases every day. However,
yeah, this is what I want from you.
However, we are not going back on the restrictions. The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, said it is so transmissible at the minute, it's so rampant in the community, that the only thing that would stop the spread is a level 5 lockdown, and we're not going to do that.
Yeah,
the health service is under severe pressure. However, the critical care is not. It is obviously always under pressure because it's the HSE, but it's not where it would be, we need to go back in restrictions. The thing that they always come back to is we're so highly vaccinated as a population. So although there is a lot more COVID in the community, it is not translating into pressure on the health service.
Great.
And that's what they're going to keep an eye on. So,
and people aren't getting seriously ill exactly. for the most part.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously you'd still be concerned for immunocompromised people. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are people who are very frustrated in that community. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, it seems like people are, you know,
yeah, I think getting sick, most getting people are getting it the way on. Me and yeah. you got it, like yeah. a bit of a cough, a bit of fatigue, but we're not ending up in hospital. And that's always what it's going to come back to with yeah. Irish health services. Like, if the health service is under pressure, now the health service is always under pressure.
Yeah.
But it is not, it's not translating into, you know, an issue at the minute with COVID.
Okay.
But I think it's fair to be a bit worried. It's so rampant in the community. Like, I can't think of anyone now who hasn't had it. But as I say...
My husband.
Well done. Touchwood. He must be very antisocial.
And my kids. Yeah. I don't know how we've managed that. I managed to have it and not give it to any of them. I did run off to another county.
I read this week that it was like a Korean doctor that said if you haven't had COVID yet, you don't have any friends.
I saw Yeah. I actually haven't said that to Gordon. Must mention that.
Mention it to Gordon, my husband.
Our shared husband. Now, next, I thought this was such an interesting thing that happened during the week with the UK MP, Jamie Wallace, who is not someone I was familiar
Me
with
either.
Prior to this mm-hmm. week.
That statement was a roller coaster.
Oh my God.
For people who haven't seen it. So the Welsh Conservative MP for Bridgend, Jamie Wallace.
Conservative MP.
Yep.
Worth noting.
Came out as trans in a statement on Twitter. The statement was a roller coaster from start to finish. He basically said he is trans. He said, well, to be more accurate, I want to be. I've been diagnosed with gender dysphoria and I felt this way since I was a very young child. He then detailed that he thought he would leave politics before he came out as trans.
I wonder now, just in terms of pronouns.
He hasn't changed yet.
Okay.
Yeah. And hasn't, you know, said anything about changing a name or anything like that okay. in the statement. Basically, he said that he was living privately, you know, as a trans person, and he was blackmailed. Someone had photographs or something, and they tried to extort £50,000 out of him. He went to the police. The person was arrested. He later goes on to detail that he was then raped when he was on a date by a man. I know he has PTSD, and he was recently in a car accident, and he fled the scene. Honestly, this statement... it had so much, but I have actually been really heartened by the response that he has gotten.
Yeah.
You know, Boris Johnson, I would point out, a day after he made a transphobic joke in the Commons, put out a statement saying that the Tory party was behind him 100%, that they would support him. He actually detailed in his statement, he said that the whips, the party whips, had been incredible. Yeah. He said he felt very loved and very supported by the Tory party. He also said, you know, the messages that he's gotten from Labour and, you know, all the other political party leaders have, you know, come out in support of him. So it is, although horrific that this happened to him, all the things that happened to him, but it has been it's definitely a sea change. You know, this is the first ever trans
MP. Yeah, it's huge. And a conservative MP as well. Mm-hmm. I just hope that it goes well for, I feel like them, I'm going to say them.
Yeah.
I hope it goes well for them and I hope that they continue to have a positive response because it's not easy to be trans. And, you know, this week was Trans Day of Visibility.
Visibility.
Mm-hmm. I can't speak. Trans Day of Visibility. And it's still so important to acknowledge that, you know, being a trans person is not easy, particularly in the UK at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's such a really toxic environment when it comes to accepting trans people. But if you are trans and you're listening, I love you. I accept you. You will always have my support, and best of luck to Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, next up, this is an interesting one. There is a new master of the Rotunda Hospital,
mm-hmm.
and his appointment is not exactly being well received.
Yeah, this is a story by the ever glamorous and amazing Ellen Coyne. So the new master of the Rotunda is a man, and he is the private practice partner of the man who currently holds the job, who was also on the interview panel, who picked his private practice partner as the man for the job. Now,
I was talking about this with Gordon yesterday, and I was saying, you know, did you hear this story? And he was like, yeah, but sure, maybe he was the best person for the job. And I was like, yeah, maybe he was. However, there's no way that his private practice business partner should have been on the panel. He should have recused himself.
Yeah, so, you know... It details in the story that, you know, recruitment in the Rotunda is subject to the provisions of the Public Service Management Agreement, and everything was above board, and there was no issue. They haven't broken any laws. They haven't, you know, broken any rules. However, it has made people very uncomfortable. It's also the first time that a master of one hospital is now going to be a master of a different hospital.
Yeah, because he was previously master of Crumlin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, there's also been some disquiet that it's a man replacing a man in a maternity hospital. Mm-hmm. People think, you know, it should be a woman. It details in the story as well that the panel to pick the master of Ireland's oldest maternity hospital is made up of 9 men and 4 women.
Mm.
Now, it probably is, I'm guessing, but it probably is that there just are more men doctors and like in these roles or whatever, but I think that's another issue for another day that needs to be looked at. But yeah, so the new master is Professor Sean Daly.
Mm.
Who is the private practice partner of Professor Fergal Malone, who currently has the job. So there's been a bit of disquiet about it. They haven't broken any rules, but yeah, as you said, there was a lot of people who felt that he should have recused himself, because even if and they're just business partners, that's still a
conflict of interest.
Yeah, it's still a pretty close link.
Yeah, no matter how you look at it, it's questionable. And if they didn't break any rules, maybe they should look at the rules, because doesn't seem right. And that's not, obviously I'm not an expert. I'm not in there. I don't know these people. But, you know, that does seem dubious, and it casts a shadow over his appointment. And it is, you know, I know that there are women who applied for the role. I read Dr. Jen Donnelly, who I'm fortunate to have met. She's an incredible obstetrician. And she said, honoured to interview for the master/CEO position at Rotunda Hospital today. This is last week she posted this. An institution that I have huge respect for, commitment, inclusivity, excellence and innovation. Disappointed to not have been successful. #Hashtag women in leadership.
Mm-hmm. And I would just like to see a woman in charge of a maternity hospital.
Yeah, and I think it's not that only women could be in charge of a maternity hospital, but it does seem like surely it's time.
Yes, that's the way I felt about it. It's like they've never had a woman, and it's Ireland's oldest maternity hospital, and it's 2022. I think, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of very talented and brilliant obstetricians who are also women who could have done the job. But as you say, we're not on the interview panel and we don't understand these things.
I'm certainly not an obstetrician and I've never run a hospital, so no. Maybe not in a position to comment. But anyway, you just love to see women doing well. That's all.
I'm a big fan of the woman.
Me too.
10 out of 10. Would recommend to a friend.
Aoife, thank you so much. That's Aoife Moore, political correspondent from the Irish Examiner. Aoife, where can people find you?
I'm Aoife Grace Moore on Twitter, and I would ask everyone to please buy the Irish Examiner.
Yes, buy a paper today. Now, as I said at the top of the pod, Andrew Fitzsimons is an incredibly successful Irish hairdresser. You may know him from his work with the Kardashians. He also works with people like Megan Fox, just, you know, the hottest women around, basically. And he had a collaboration with Penny's, a hair care collaboration, which I think lots of people absolutely adored, including me. I know there were lots of people who were sad when that collaboration ended. And now he has his own brand. It's available in Boots now. If you want to get your hands on it, I think it's gorgeous. And I've really enjoyed using the products. But I was really keen to speak to him this time, because I got to interview him the last time he was here and got to know, you know, he's a really hard worker. He worked so hard to get to where he is from being a teenager in Dublin. And he also works really hard when it comes to doing good things with his life. He does a lot of work with trans people in LA. And when I saw the advertising campaign that came with this new hair brand, I was really moved, to be honest, because it included all kinds of different people. And for me personally, it was amazing to see a fat woman, not just, you know, a fashion plus size person who with all the right curves in all the right places, like a properly full figured woman, you know, shot boldly and with her own image, not just kind of tucked in behind other models. And I really wanted to ask him about why he made that decision, why it was important for him to do that. But I started by asking him about one of his most famous clients, because she has got some really long blonde hair at the moment. Chloe is living her blonde life at the moment. I'm loving this blonde look on her.
Yeah. I don't really usually become friends with clients. I usually have boundaries because I also have to have my personal time. Chloe is one of those clients that just, from working together for so long, we've become more than friends. We're like family at this point. So it's like having a really good friend or a best friend that you see starting to like really shine, really come into their own.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I can tell, like, you know, with friends, you can tell when someone's like a little off, or you can tell when someone's going through something rough. But it's really nice to see her genuinely like shining, like smiling from the inside.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So yeah, we're just in Miami. She has very, very long blonde hair right now, which I love, which is very, very Miami. I think we were there. Well, I was there for 8 hours and then I flew here.
Yeah, because you're like, your life is crazy. You travel a lot. Obviously, you have to be kind of ready to go at any time.
And yeah.
You and I have spoken before about your career and, you know, the amazing work that you do and how hard you worked to make it from being, mm-hmm. you know, a teenage hairdresser in Dublin to being where you are now, which is absolutely at the top of your game. There's no doubt about that. And today we are going to chat about the fact that you're in Dublin to launch your own hair care line, which is kind of your second hair care line.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
But I suppose what I wanted to really focus on today, because we have talked about your career before, is the campaign that launched your hair care line.
Yeah.
Which was really significant to me, and I'm sure to lots of other people, because diversity in beauty is usually kind of a tokenistic thing, and beauty campaigns might include someone who isn't white, and it might include someone who has a disability, and it might include someone who's plus size, but usually you feel like it's like a box ticking exercise.
Yeah.
But your campaign is not like that. Tell me about that decision.
Well, for me, this has been a project that is 21 years. I started hairdressing 21 years ago. It's been 21 years in the making, pretty much. Or I'm 34. So it's the most me thing I've ever done. It's basically culminating every lesson that I didn't know why I was learning growing up. I left school really young. I traveled the world really young, with not a lot of access to anything, trying to carve things for myself, and going through a lot of hard times and not really understanding why I had this like urge or like drive to move in a certain way that was so far from home and so far from what I was used to. Yeah, as you said, I have brought out products before. I had a really, really amazing experience working with Pennies and creating products. And that was like very specific to, because it was for Pennies, it was almost like my love letter to the girls that I grew up with, you know, and my sister, my mom, and creating something special for people who, when price inclusivity was talked about before, and do you know what, a lot of the time it wasn't even talked about, it was just like, if something is this price, it's going to be the shit version, it's going to be the watered down version, the packaging is going to be the least imaginative. So that's kind of what I wanted to do with that.
You did it.
That was my number one agenda, basically, was to say, hey, you can actually just put thought and creativity into something. You don't always need the biggest budgets for something to be an experience. And as a gay homosexual, I'm about an experience. I like
gay
things,
homosexual.
I'm like, that's the gayest type of homosexual you can get. But I like things to be beautiful. And that can mean a million different things to me, and it can mean a million different things to other people. So this time around, this is my own brand that I own. This is a kind of like a slice of my brain. It's the kind of products that I always wanted to be able to create. I'm really, really proud of the formulas, the packaging. Then when it came to the campaign, I always really tried to think about messaging. One thing from therapy that I learned is that words have a lot of power and significance, whether you realize it or not. The way people interpret your communication is an interpretation. So creating visuals that I knew were a tool to communicate with specifically women on a large scale, I obviously knew that I wanted to be respectful. Women saved me. I went from a all boys rugby school that had like priests as teachers and stuff like that. It wasn't a safe space for me as a sensitive gay boy in Dublin in the 90s. Women kind of took me in, sheltered me when I worked in a when I got a job at a hair salon at 13, I just for the first time didn't have to perform as male. Mm-hmm. And I'm a boy, I'm male, but I'm not going to pretend I like sports for anyone, for straight people. I'm not going to pretend. Yeah. I don't choose to live my life that way. So women gave me that tool to be able to actually believe in myself, to see myself, to grow my real self. So I made that commitment to myself then to never exploit women, to only work with women. So when it came to my campaign, it was really, really important for me to say something, because not only did I see advertising and beauty as a male-made environment in which you, the business model, which is a kind of a genius business model, is like create insecurities in women and then sell them the remedy.
Yeah.
Hey, you're supposed to look like this and you don't, but use this and you may. Is like, that's great for selling lots of stuff, but it actually is one of the most damaging parts of advertising. Fashion and beauty really have done a lot of damage to women and how women perceive themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of those decisions were made by men.
Yeah.
So for me, being a different type of boy, it was important for me to, when I had my messaging, for it to be positive, for it to be my contribution to not only hairstyling, because in the hair world, specifically even in beauty, hair has been advertised the same way always. When the first celebrity hairstylists came out, the John Friedas or the Vidal Sassoons in the 60s, it was a male's interpretation of femininity or of women's identities. And nothing really changed after that. It was always this not a hair out of place, cardboard looking hair. And like, I can't imagine, like, as a boy, like, I can just roll up in sweatpants and I'm put on a shirt and I'm grand. Whereas like women, you have to do it all in heels and your hair can't be out of place and like mind the child and like all this bullshit. Yeah. So for me, I wanted to reset people's expectations of what they expect from hair advertising or beauty advertising. And I wanted to not create those... not feed into or perpetuate those ideals that actually mean nothing to everyday people, and reset in a way where, like, my advertising is a giant blue sky. It's really simple, and I just wanted it to be this simple communication of this giant blue sky, kind of symbolizing, for me anyway, freedom, possibilities. Like, that's the sky is all of ours. Yeah. You know, nature is all of ours. I didn't want it to be like a white background, a model with like stiff, gorgeous hair, shiny, blah, 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 and to be a fantasy, having a load of packs of hair in there and just create something that isn't realistic. The hair is blowing in the wind wildly. All of the women that we cast are all individually powerful, powerful women.
Yeah.
In their own rights. And I wanted them all to be able to show that power and kind of like what I was talking about earlier about Chloe, is like be able to shine from the inside and that be their power.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, these are products. I can talk about the products all day. I can talk about hair all day. But this is for you, and this is can be your interpretation rather than me trying to project anything onto you. And women are projected on all day, every day. I yeah. do not want to add to that.
Well, how did it feel then when the campaign kind of came out and people responded to it in the way that they did? I'm thinking specifically about the British beauty writer Laura Capon, yeah. who wrote a gorgeous piece, which honestly I feel like I could have written myself, like every word of that I felt. Mm. And what she wrote was, for people who haven't read it, that, you know, as fat women who work in beauty, like she was and I was as well, like one of the reasons that I'm so into beauty and passionate about beauty is because you don't have to be a certain size to wear a lipstick, you know. It's always accessible.
One size fits all. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, even if you're broke, you can grab a few pennies together and find a lipstick that you can afford. Whereas, you know, when I went shopping with my friends for clothes, there was nothing there for me. And so she spoke about how powerful it was to see a campaign with, and I use the word fat, that's how I like to describe myself. It's very powerful for me actually, just for mm-hmm. anyone who's listening who doesn't know this, mm-hmm. taking control of that word yeah. has been very powerful for me. And to see a really beautiful, properly fat, plus size woman mm-hmm. in her own photo, mm-hmm. looking stunning from an angle that maybe would be considered unflattering, but for me just says power. Mm-hmm. Like, that was mind blowing. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to other plus size women in Ireland who I know feel the same. Laura wrote about it beautifully, mm-hmm. and I'll link to that in the show notes so that people can read the article. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
Reading that article, I think I had like some meeting, like a couple of minutes off, like that morning, LA time. It's like 8 hours after. I was. Should we just pause?
Yeah, we can pause.
Or do we keep going? We're in my hotel room and the coffee just came.
Let's just keep going. We're in the flow.
I read the piece and I just immediately bawled my eyes out. Mm. Women to me are, well, I don't know, this is going to sound weird, but I see everything in a circular kind of way. My spiritual outlook is very very circular. I believe everything works in cooperation. So one woman is all women to me. Peachy, the model that you're referring to in the campaign, she's my mom, she's my sister, she's all women are. So reading something that I guess that I hadn't prepared myself.
Yeah.
I knew what I wanted to do and I knew who I wanted to be for women, but I hadn't at all prepared myself for actually putting it out in the world and then other people perceiving it and taking away what they take away from it. And I did want it to be kind of left open to interpretation, not be literal, like, hey, love your body, yeah. like whatever.
It's because it says, like, it says so much more because it's not literal.
Yeah.
And I think it's all the more powerful. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, one thing I wanted to say to you in this conversation is I was thinking about, I was like, why you and I, obviously we met before and I kind of felt we connected on some
yeah.
level.
Yeah.
And I felt very comfortable with you. And I was thinking this morning, I was like, I wonder what that is. And I think it's because I knew this about you. Mm-hmm. I knew that you, every situation that you go into as a fat person, I'll speak for myself. Mm-hmm. Every situation that I go into, in the back of my mind is this person judging me because of my size? Because right. a lot of people are.
Right.
And even if it's not conscious or they're not intending to, they are.
Right.
And you don't really know where you are in their brain
right.
on the spectrum of judgment or
right.
fat phobia.
Right.
And I know that that's not you.
Yeah.
And so I automatically feel kind of at peace with you in a way that I might not with other people. You know, it's so powerful. And you putting out that visual says to every woman, I want you to use my product. I want everyone. I connect with you. I see you. I respect you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so rare.
Mm.
It's tragic, isn't it, that it's so rare?
It is. And to me, even just that the campaign, like, we have lots of different types of imagery with lots of different types of
yeah.
women. Like, we have in one of our collections, we have this amazing woman named Cataluna, who's the first trans Miss USA contestant. And myself and my friend Wendy, she's been my sister for 10 years. We met in New York. She's an incredible makeup artist and happens to be trans. And we were standing there on set, looking at the monitor, looking at the images coming in of Cataluna, just shining, And we just both, we didn't say a word to each other. We just both started tearing up because
oh.
we both at the same time realized that they're little trans and gender nonconforming kids and even gay kids. We're going to see her in a beauty store, but
yeah.
go see her in a store with as an example of beauty, and that meant a lot. But when it came to the campaign, it wasn't even for me an exercise of like I want you to buy my products. It's like I want this to be an example of how to communicate to women when it comes. If we're talking about business, if we're talking about buying things and selling things and identities, I wanted the campaign to be more of a reset of how we communicate to each other in that way, in that forum, because it doesn't have to be a damaging one. And that has that means so many different things to different people, and it is only the first step. But I think a lot of brands, they don't want to be emulated. They want to be like, they want to corner a market. I want to be emulated. I want people to really, really deeply think about the consequences of their communications on every level, especially when it comes to large advertising. Like, it only makes sense.
Andrew, like, I could talk to you for 17 years, and I am just so blown away by what you've done. It means so much to me personally, and I know to so many other women and people, as you say, because it's such a diverse campaign. Mm-hmm. The packaging on the products is stunning, by the way.
Thank you.
I feel like I could see it in, like, the, like, I don't know, like Michelle Pfeiffer in Scarface's bathroom.
Yes, yes.
I just know it's going to be a huge success.
Andrew, thank
you so much. Thank you for coming on my little old podcast.
Oh,
brand
my God,
new.
I'm so excited. Like, the fact that you are a voice in Ireland and a voice of women in Ireland is, like, you're the future. So, like, we're aligned.
Stop, I'm gonna cry. Thank you so much.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Well, when I woke up on Monday morning and I saw the news about the Oscars and all of the drama that had gone down, there was one thing I thought, and it was, thank God I have a podcast now where I can talk about celebs. And thank God this week I'll be chatting to Cassie Delaney about all of this stuff. It is that time. We're going to chat through the biggest celeb stories of the week, of which there is one which dominates. I'm sure you can appreciate. Cassie Delaney, it is such a delight to be back sitting with you. And honestly, I could not have chosen a better week for us to be together again.
Oh my God, I was giddy. So I knew we were going on from previous last weekend. And then when the Oscars happened, I was like, oh my God, I could not be more thrilled. Obviously, I was like, this is bad and this is chaotic, but I get to talk about it on the Louise McSharry show.
I actually couldn't. Like, when I woke up and, you know, obviously, like all healthy people, the first thing I do is check my phone. I opened Instagram and there was someone had posted their tweet to their Instagram account, someone who was at the Oscars. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh my God, Will Smith just got on stage and slapped Chris Rock, like blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no. I was like, this is some kind of joke.
Gag.
Can't be true. It has to be. But no.
No, it wasn't. So, I mean, everybody probably knows what happened at this stage. Chris Rock was presenting an award, got up and made a poor joke about Jada.
Yeah.
So it was a bad joke. And that's the thing. It was like, even if it wasn't kind of ill-timed and mean, it was just a poor joke.
Yeah, I was like a G.I. Jane reference in 2022. Yeah, like what?
25 years later. Okay, good one, Chris Rock.
Yeah.
So Will Smith then kind of initially laughed, then saw Jada's reaction, then got onto the stage, a long-eyed walk up to Chris Rock and gave him this kind of open-handed slap in the face, and then sat back down and shouted at him, you know, keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth. So I'm still like, we can't curse,
okay,
even though it's a podcast. Keep my wife's name out of your mouth. And then he like doubled down and shouted louder. So everyone was like, was this a gag? It's very convincing if it's a gag. But then in the fallout afterwards, it became quickly apparent that it was not. Like, it was a genuine moment of assault on stage.
It was wild. And watching people talk about it afterwards, I thought was really interesting, because obviously lots of different people came at it from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I've seen loads of people who, and obviously the whole thing was that Jada Pinkett Smith had alopecia. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons that she wore her hair so short. And so, you know, the basic concept of someone making a joke at someone's expense when it's based on a medical condition. Like, obviously nobody's going to argue that that's okay. It's not.
No.
And I saw lots of people with alopecia talking about it this week and saying, you know, it's not nice to be the butt of people's jokes, and it really represents the general attitude towards this condition. People don't take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And then there were other people coming at it from a completely different perspective, from like, you know, an anti-violence perspective. And then there were people talking about it from a race perspective and mm-hmm. like differences in culture. So there was a lot of chat this week.
There was a lot of chat about it. So I think one of the interesting things when we look at like all pop culture moments like this, it's, even though I know pop culture is often seen as frivolous, but what it does is it presents an opportunity to assess the sentiment of society.
Yeah.
So the fallout from it and the way people have reacted are telling us a lot about how we feel about violence, especially violence on like a mainstream stage like the Oscars. So actually a group called Blue Rose Research, they're a Democratic pollster, surveyed 2,162 Americans online immediately after the Academy Awards. And overall, 52.3% of people said that Chris Rock deserved what came to him, which is very interesting. But one of the very, very interesting points of this survey was that the younger the people were, the younger the respondents were, the more likely they were to blame Chris Rock. So it wasn't until, we didn't see till kind of a change in that attitude till between 50 to 64, when people were like, actually Will is mostly to blame, or Will is mostly in the wrong. And I suppose the issue with this kind of incident is that like it is so nuanced and everyone's bringing their own experiences to it. Sean King, who's a really prolific advocate in America, and he's a big spokesperson for the Black Lives Matter movement, he did a live on his Instagram on Monday night. Like, I consumed every bit of media I could find.
Oh, I'm loving this on digest. Yeah.
And he said the problem with an incident like this is that it's like that ink blot test that a psychiatrist gives you. Everyone brings their own experience to it.
Yeah.
So we can't objectively break down what happened here. And we're trying to find the lesser of two evils because we want to process the world in black and white.
Yeah. And there isn't a black and white here.
But there isn't. Like, there's so much to it. And I think the conversations that have been happening, particularly around race afterwards, and the highlighting that, you know, black women in America are the least protected people in all of America, is true.
Yeah.
And therefore, Will was justified to get up and defend her. Now, a lot of other people jumping in and saying his defense and the way he went to violence, while very emotional, is still toxic masculinity. Yeah. That to defend a woman, you must get physical with the man.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I've landed on it.
I found even like what he said, like keep my mother effing wife's name out of your mother effing mouth or whatever. Yeah. It was all, this is my woman, you know? And I just never like that vibe.
Yeah, like, and even you know, in his speech, he was like, it's my job to protect. Like, I protect the women on set. I protect my family. Love makes you do crazy things. It's like, no, love doesn't make you do crazy things. Well, testosterone makes you do crazy things. Testosterone and alcohol and whatever else was going at the Oscars made you do that.
I think I would like to flag, I think Sean King might be slightly problematic. I just want to acknowledge that. There's some mixed reports about him on the internet. Okay. But anyway, that's fine. The point stands. But I think for me, what I thought about a lot was, you know, he didn't seem like he was in the greatest form of his life,
no.
Will. Like, you know, who knows what's going on? And I know there were lots of people who said that, like, there could be a lot of other stuff going on. And obviously people brought in all of the various conversations that have happened about Will and Jada. Like, at the end of the day, we don't know. Like, we've no idea what the story is or what's going on in their relationship right now or what history he has with Chris Rock even, or any of that stuff. But one thing I thought was interesting that I saw someone pointing out was that, like, Will Smith... If Will Smith wanted to have Chris Rock on the ground, like really hurt him, he could easily do that. You know, there's a huge size difference. Obviously, Will Smith has done loads of training in his life at being a big, tough man. Like, if he'd wanted to floor him, he could have, but he didn't. Like, he chose to hit him in a particular way, which I thought was interesting as well. Like, what was the intent? Like, it seems like there was a conscious choice, I feel like, not to really properly hurt him. Not saying that what he did is mild or okay, but just in the context of who Will Smith is,
it was kind of... And the fact that it was a slap, not a dead-on punch, you know? I do think that he was conscious of what he was doing.
Yeah.
He made a decision to hit Chris Rock in that way. Yeah. I mean, there was a long old walk from his seat up to the stage. He was thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think that the... worrying thing about it, and I think it's far more nuanced, it's not as easy to say, okay, children will have seen that and now children will accept violence. I don't think that that's an issue.
I also don't know how many children are watching the Oscars, to be honest. I don't know how many people in general are watching the Oscars
these
days.
They're pretty boring these days. But I think that the kind of messaging around toxic masculinity, the signals that he's sending off about it are wrong.
Yeah.
And I would like to have seen him stand up for Jada and say, you know, that is a poor joke, but do it in a way that is not violent.
Well, I think it would have been amazing. And what's unfortunate about this for him is that he finally won his Best Actor Oscar that night. And, you know, that's not what people are talking about. And I think it would have been amazing if he'd gotten up and accepted his award and said, before I say anything, I'd like to say, you know, my wife has a medical condition and that joke at her expense was not okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he doesn't have an opportunity to send that message in another way. And I can't stop thinking about that research you mentioned, though, that it was the younger people who thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I would have thought, like, you know, given the fact that we're talking about like the woke generation and all the rest, that people would not have thought that
was
okay.
It was super, super interesting. So like they broke it down in loads of different areas. Particularly where you would assume, say, that Trump supporters would have been more in favor.
Yeah.
It was split right down the middle. The lower income bracket, the more likely they were to blame Chris Rock. And the lower the level of education, the more likely they were to blame Chris Rock as well. So maybe it speaks to kind of how people feel like they are treated, or maybe it feels like the indefensible or the more vulnerable members of society could see themselves reflected in Jada a bit more, and they didn't want to be the butt of the joke. I don't know. I just think it's very interesting. I think looking at that age breakdown, it is interesting. But it does show that we've a long way to go in terms of education around violence and confrontation and conflict.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we could talk about it all day, but we have to talk about Liam Payne.
Hours. Liam.
What was happening there?
Do you know what, though? I think it's a blessing in disguise that his accent was so weird, because if you stop and ignore the accent and listen to what was coming out of his mouth, it is just pure horseshit.
A garbled mess. Like, I have no idea what he was talking about.
Absolutely insane. So the story is that he was stopped by Good Morning Britain on the red carpet. And he was
why was Liam Payne even at the Oscars?
What was Good Morning Britain at the Oscars to interview Liam Payne from Wolverhampton? It's surely you could have done that back in the studios.
You're true.
Good Morning Britain there stopped Liam, 28 years of age, talking about the beef. And during the conversation, he was like, I can't take sides. You know, Will Smith is his neighbor. And he knows Will Smith's family and his kids. But he's also kind of friendly with Chris Rock because he met him when he was playing out Madison, when he played a sold out show at Madison Square Garden.
Do you think Chris Rock, Will Smith and Will Smith's kids actually know who Liam Payne is?
Absolutely not.
I suppose maybe Chris Rock's daughter or son is a huge One Direction fan.
I'd say they're like Liam Payne is friends with Harry Styles.
Right.
Like, that's, I think, what the connection would be. But when he was stopped and asked his opinion, he revealed his answer in the strangest new accent I've ever heard from a British export over into the US. It was, some people were calling it like just an American twang, but it's actually like, it's almost as if it's this kind of Dutch European mixed.
Sounded a bit Welsh to me at times.
Just bizarre. And also will not pronounce the last syllable of any word. So it was just like everything kind of fell off into this twang. But it was a good distraction because he just kept referring to Will Smith as one of the world's greatest emotors.
Yeah.
And it was just like talking about this moment of beauty that came out of the conflict. He was like, it was just, he spoke from the heart and it was wonderful. It was so great to see. I was like, this is weird. Why is Liam Payne being the commenter on this conflict anyway?
It was very strange. I will say, I know lots of people are like, Will Smith's acceptance speech was just like, you know, pathetic effort to kind of get people outside. But I think he was speaking from the heart. And I think his point about, like, you know, when you're in this job, you have to ignore a lot of things that people say and you have to ignore a lot of disrespect.
Yeah.
Like, that's true, you know, and even, you know, at a pathetic low level, whatever you would call where I am in the scheme of profile, like, you have to ignore what people say about you. And people say horrible things about you and you just have to get on with it, you know?
It's so nasty out
there. And it is
that is a weird thing. Yeah. I can understand snapping, but I mean, doing it at the Oscars, doing it physically, it's all, yeah, it's all
the only thing I did not really like about his speech was his comparison to Richard Williams.
Yes, I thought that was out of line.
He really should not have dragged the family into it.
Yeah.
That was a really great moment for them.
Did you see, though, the I saw a photo, it was obviously a screen grab of Venus and Serena watching, and Serena's face, like, she looked like, she looked compassionate.
Yeah.
And she was kind of holding on to Venus's arm, like she felt for him, you know. So hopefully, yeah, the family weren't too upset, because it really should have been their night. And by the way, I know we don't have time, but like, Beyonce's performance, holy moly, what a, yeah, tribute to Venus, yeah, and Serena. Amazing. Now, before we leave the Oscars, and we don't have a lot of time left, but before we leave the Oscars, what a beautiful moment between Lady Gaga and Liza Minnelli.
Absolutely gorgeous. So Liza Minnelli was there on stage with Lady Gaga to present an award for Best Picture. Liza was celebrating 50 years of Cabaret, 50 yeah, year anniversary. So she came on stage and she was in a wheelchair, but she kind of fumbled over her notes a little bit, was a little bit kind of spooked or something on, yeah, stage, seemed visibly nervous. And Lady Gaga just presented her with the most beautiful compassion and patience, and kind of held her hand. You could really see it's, yeah, a really, really good close handhold. And, yeah, she was really trying to make her feel safe, and bent down to her and was like, I got you. And Liza's like, I know.
And that was when, like, when they thought they'd already thrown to the clips, so like, they didn't think any, I really genuinely think they didn't, she, Gaga didn't think anyone was going to hear that, like, because, yeah, they were like, and here are the nominees for the Best Pictures. And then after about 5 seconds, Gaga goes, I got you. Like, it, yeah, was so beautiful. I just thought it was really respectful. It wasn't in any way patronizing. And like, you know, we see, I think we all have probably a lot to learn about how to treat older people with, mm, dignity and respect. And it was really gorgeous to see it kind of on that huge stage.
Yeah, and really speaks to Lady Gaga's opinion of the legacy of the Oscars.
Yeah.
That here is someone who deserves to be respected. Here is old school cinema. Yeah. This is old school Hollywood. It was just beautiful. Loads of people on Twitter calling for Lady Gaga to present next year's Oscars. 100% do it through music. Oh, that will, God, that will boost the ratings.
Please, I would love that. And then quickly before I let you go, two little pieces of film news which I thought were interesting this week. Aisling B is being
Aisling B does be in a new film.
She does about, be in a new film
about Take That. Now look, there's puns. I can't read any pieces about this because the Take That puns are just going through my head. But doesn't it make you feel like the way men feel about sport when you see an Irish woman perform, yes, well globally?
Yes.
I'm like, go on, you Aisling in green.
And she's so great.
She's so fantastic.
Yeah.
It's the same with the Pillow Queens, yes, on James Gordon again. I just feel so much pride and joy. And I'm like, I feel like I know these people, yes, personally.
Pillow Queens, of course, who... How do I look, which is the theme song of this podcast, is their song. They're amazing.
Yeah, no, I feel like I get like starstruck when I see the Pillow Queens, and Aisling B as well. So she's going to be in a new film that's about to take that story with a great cast, and she said, I can't wait to sing, which is really interesting because the only rendition we've ever heard of Aisling singing is Zombie. Which is
In This Way Up.
Yeah, which is comedy gold, but I wouldn't, amazing, say they're known for their voices. But I think, I suspect that Aisling is going to have one of those kind of gorgeous low tonal voices, like, mm, when Jennifer Lawrence sang in The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And it kind of surprised everyone. It was like, you're not a singer, but this is lovely.
God, don't you just love to see, as you said yourself, you love to see an Aisling doing well.
I do.
And then before we finish, Lisa Kudrow has said she wouldn't say no to a Romy and Michelle reunion.
Yeah, so she said she's...
Let me tell you, Googling this story is very hard because the movie is called Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Reunion.
Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Yeah, and so I did the maths on this, right? So she was on Jimmy Kimmel and she was talking about how during the SAG Awards in February, her and Mira Sorvino popped on their costumes from Romy and Michelle's, re-engaged with their characters, and how then they were like, yeah, actually, let's do this again. So the screenwriter Robin Schiff had been asked before and said no, and then after the SAG Awards was like, yes, let's maybe do this. So still very, very vague. But doing the maths, the original film was in 1997 at their 10-year school reunion. So it might make sense for them to do a 40-year reunion in 2027.
Oh, I would love that so much.
Yeah.
I love that film. I'm going to rewatch that actually the next time I have 2 hours, which is maybe never. But sometime soon, yeah, I'm going to rewatch.
I'd say it's a perfect Sunday afternoon watch. It's just gorgeous. Great film.
Well, Cassie Delaney, it has been an absolute treasure to spend time with you talking about the celebs again. Cassie is a founder of Tall Tales Podcast. You can hear Cassie on The Creep Dive, which is magnificent. It's Jen O'Dwyer and Sophie White and Cassie talking about creepy stuff. Last week, Jen found a human tooth on a beach.
live reporting from the studio with the guards.
Truly so much fun. So if you're looking for a podcast to listen to after this one, I can't recommend it enough. Cassie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Louise.
We are just about at the end of our episode this week, but before I go, I wanted to tell you about some things that I've been holding on to for months, and in like between the jigs and the reels last week, I just completely forgot to tell you about recommendations, but I've been saving up some special things that I think you might enjoy if you're looking for entertainment or indeed food this week. I wanted to start with Somebody Somewhere, which is an absolutely gorgeous show. It's on Sky or Now TV. I think it was on HBO Max in America, and it's called Somebody Somewhere. It's featuring Bridget Everett, who you may know. She was in Patty Cakes, that film, and she's been in bits and pieces, but you would definitely know her to see her. And she basically is someone who has returned to the small town in Oklahoma that she grew up in. Oklahoma? Kansas? Somewhere like that. And it's about her kind of recovering from the death of a loved one. And it's a dark comedy, but it's really gorgeous. I loved it. The characters are not the kind of characters I think that you see a lot on TV, and I just can't recommend it enough. Short episodes as well, which I don't know about you, but this girl falls asleep if she tries to watch anything that's longer than 40 minutes these days. So a good 20-30 minute or that's a winner for me. I also wanted to recommend, I was in Galway there a couple of weeks ago, and we went to Tartar, which is a restaurant. They're specializing in kind of small plates and delicious wine. When I say we had a time, there were six of us. We ordered the entire menu, and I cannot recommend that you gather a group and do that exact thing if you get a chance. It was delicious. And then finally for this week, I had COVID a couple of weeks ago, and I finally had time to watch Pink's documentary, which is on Amazon Prime. And I found it really interesting. I'm not like a particular Pink fan, but I love music documentaries. So I decided I'd give it a go. And it's interesting because it follows her on tour, but it is really more about parenting. She brings her kids with her everywhere, basically. And it was a lot about her relationship with them and the dynamic and how she makes it work. And I found it quite thought-provoking in terms of how we look at parenting and working parents and how people make things work. I would be interested, actually, if you watch it, to hear what you think, if you want to drop me a message on social media or an email, and then maybe I could bring some of your feedback to the podcast next week, because I thought some of the things she said about parenting, I didn't completely agree with, but she certainly is dedicated to raising her children and being with them. And I thought that was really impressive, the way that she kind of builds her world around them. So anyway, that's called All I Know So Far. It's on Amazon Prime. It's like an hour and 40 minutes, not too big of an undertaking. And it was certainly a good distraction from my COVID. So maybe you're in that boat this week, because God knows loads of us are. Anyway, that is all for today. I would so appreciate it if you would rate, review, follow, you know, all those things that you do on your podcast platforms. It all really helps. I've heard people say that 100 million times on other podcasts, and now it's my turn, but apparently it actually really does help. That's what they're telling me. So yeah, I will talk to you next Friday. In the meantime, have a great one.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.